iMagazine is a quarterly journal of graphic design and visual culture that embraces all the things that graphic designers are interested in, from art direction to photography, to typography, comic books, posters, type design, and new technology which they're likely to encounter. And we also cover things that are not strictly speaking in the graphic design world, but we think will excite and interest our readers. My name is John L. Walters. I'm the editor of I, the International Review of Graphic Design, and I'm also, along with Simon Esterson, the art director, the co-owner of I Magazine. It hasn't always been an indie mag, although it's always had a very independent spirit. It was founded by Word Search, which was a kind of independent company that published Blueprint, the architecture magazine, and the founding editor was Rick Poyner, and its founding art director was Stephen Coates. And publisher Peter Murray of Word Search decided that there was a place for a quarterly magazine about graphic design, and it was produced out of the Blueprint offices in West London. Financially, it had a few struggles in the early years and was bought by EMAP and then transferred to a company called Quantum and then was bought by Haymarket. I became the editor in 99 and went through several of these different owners as an employee. But in 2008, I was able to do a management buyout along with my colleague Simon Esterson. So in April 2008, we became the owners of I Magazine and I became completely indie. I think I's always been an independent kind of magazine, and it's in that British tradition of titles like the Architectural Review, which may have gone through different owners, but have a kind of spirit that the editors always try to maintain a spirit of the magazine rather than conform. There was a sort of dangerous point a few years before we went indie when we might have been subsumed into a kind of mega brand called Brand Republic at Haymarket. They wanted to pull all their titles into one basket, things like campaign and marketing, and saw I as just part of this continuum. Whereas I think we tend to see I Magazine and also I Magazine's readers as independently minded people. One of the great changes that we've been able to make since becoming an indie mag is just increasing quality of all the production from the print and paper. We've been printing with a fantastic printer called Pure Print over the last 10 years. What might seem trivial things like the quality of the cardboard box that you pack the issue in. You know, it's an expensive magazine and we want people to really you want it to arrive at people's doorsteps in the best possible condition. I think magazine makers like Simon and myself are quite obsessive about the subject matter and obsessive about what we produce. And each issue is such a fantastic opportunity to explore a new area, often areas that we've never really delved into before. So we're constantly learning about what we can do. I think there is sometimes a thought that print technology belongs to previous centuries and that it's just sort of clinging on while everybody else gets obsessed by what happens on screens. But there's so much more you can do with print now. We use the Indigo Press, the digital press, to do 8,000 different numbered covers. It enabled us to have quite a fresh look at aspects of type design we hadn't covered before. Was pretty unique in that it was the first time we'd worked with outside designers to create a cover. In this case, I had interviewed Muir McNeil for an article in the issue called Pleasure in the Process, which was about their very process systems-oriented approach, very mathematical approach to generating type. For some time, Simon Esterson had been intrigued by the possibilities of variable data printing. And we'd seen a few other magazines try it out, but not with anything that really got us excited. It's often just used to put someone's name on the front cover, or maybe just change the colours around a little bit, or more commercial level, just have different Star Wars characters on the front cover. We wanted to do something where every cover was completely different, and yet they were part of a family. And Muir McNeil, Hamish Muir and Paul McNeil, came up with a genius solution by overlapping two of their type systems, which created a myriad possibilities. It's not a sort of like a wallpaper pattern that just repeats. It's actually completely never repeats, and it's produced by endless combinations of similar size type with just limited to three colours. They very quickly understood that the mosaic software program which the HP Indigo Press uses could be used to kind of expand the thing they already did with silkscreen printing. So there's a kind of very, making the cover, we had a very pleasing coming together of technology and type design process that was, I think, is non-gratuitous and yet is completely delightful to see. It's all about colour and form, as Hamish Muir said, and graphic designers love colour and form. And there's that kind of little frisson of realising, you know, looking at the number on the back and realising you have number 6,250 out of 8,000. The time iMagazine was launched, it was a really interesting period of change just after the fall of the Berlin Wall and just before the start of the World Wide Web. There was a lot of talk about the new electronic media, and you can read some very interesting articles in those early issues, which we now put online. Print was really the default way that you communicated with the world. There were loads of magazines, there were loads of weeklies and monthlies and different sorts of ways of reporting on design and typography. Now everything's changed. Really the default way of communicating with the world is online. So to make a magazine, you've got to have a pretty good reason. The longevity of print, the satisfaction you get of holding printed artifact like a book or a magazine. And I think there's also something to do with memory and understanding and the way you actually grasp a difficult subject through words and pictures. That can be a richer experience when you have a print magazine. But then again, there's an awful lot of information which it's much more sensible to get online, get on your phone while you're just looking up some details and whatever. So I think the whole landscape of communication has changed such a lot that we're quite fortunate that iMagazine is at the end where print really still counts a lot and can make a big difference. Having said that, we've really benefited from all those technological changes that have made it much easier, more economical to communicate. You don't have to send proofs by fax or wait for them to be couriered or sent somewhere now that it's so easy for it to have PDFs flying around for your contributors to look at. I can ask a contributor in Australia or New Zealand to do something overnight that is there waiting for me the next day. So we really enjoy every aspect of the communication landscape, and we're also looking for ways, and this is a challenge for print magazines, looking for ways to cover things that are not just print in a print magazine. So there's innovations in exhibition design, in motion graphics. For instance, in the next issue we have, I think, our first ever review of a computer video game. We have a critic, a writer, who's prepared to write about it in a critical way, actually analyse a bit more what's going on. They're not just scanning it and saying, oh, that's pretty good, you should check this out. The current world of design publishing is intriguing because on the one hand you have very popular design blogs and websites. You also have people using social media to just give little blasts of little visual treats to people. You've also got books, sometimes quite lavish books about single designers or about a particular aspect of design, illustration, photography and so on. I think magazines, and particularly indie magazines, fall in a nice central position. We produce things that are of a better quality than a lot of the books that are out there. On the other hand, we've got the luxury of pages of space to go into a lot more depth than you could do in a simple blog post. It's also something that you can keep and refer to. And I know that, you know, the feedback we get is that people do hang on to their copies of I and go back to them. And sometimes we discover things they didn't notice the first time round because maybe it's become more relevant to their what they're doing in their career or the way their interests have evolved. I mean, the world of design is full of archives, and one of the great treats of working at I is when we find an archive that hasn't really been seen very much, such as the monotype archive we showed in issue 84, or we interview a designer such as Bob Blackman, Aro Blackman, who is the cover star of issue 95, and go through the fruits of, you know, nearly six decades of amazing work. As I say, we're not making a book, we can't show everything, but we can really show quite a broad selection of what that person's done. And, you know, we have long captions to, we put things into context. In the case of Bob Blackman, we had them separate pieces about different things he'd done in this very long career. So we have a spread about his New Yorker covers and another spread about his work as an animator. He had a 27-year career making animations in addition to all the illustrations. I think we're in a really satisfying, interesting middle position, become quite obsessive and go into a lot of depth with somebody, but it's not like spending 4 years making a book, which incidentally is what Simon and I did when we did the Alan Kitching A Life in Letterpress, which is a really hefty 400-page book we did for Lawrence King a couple of years ago. Well, of course, the design of I is absolutely crucial. But it's a tough call for a graphic designer, an art director, because it's all about graphic design. We're showing other people's work. So the design has to be very good, but not call attention to itself. There have been some design magazines that have made a point of being quite extravagant design in their own right. But I think that's not something that's in the tradition of the magazine. And really looking back, and I do spend some time going through the archives so that we can upload new things to the website. I think I've been fortunate having probably the three best designers to achieve that. Stephen Coates for the first part of the magazine, then Nick Bell, and then for about 15 years now, Simon Esterson, who is one of those legendary art directors. I mean, he's done so many other things, from Blueprint to the Architectural Review to the Sunday Times, recent Sunday Times redesign. Simon is one of those art directors who really enjoys other people's work, you know, whether it's looking through the covers of the New York Times or the archives of Town magazine, which he's doing right now. He gets a great pleasure, and he has a journalistic approach to graphic design as opposed to a design for design's sake approach. There's one thing we do with the design, on one level it's quite subtle, not everyone notices it. It's a way of championing the kind of golden age of type design that we now inhabit. Ever since issue 72, we've changed the typefaces for each issue. The grid is the same, the page format is the same, pagination goes up and down a little bit, but it's roughly the same. But if you look closely, you'll see that the typeface is always different. And when Simon first proposed doing that as part of the redesign, I thought that would be impossibly hard work. In fact, it is very hard work, because you have to change all the settings on InDesign, all the templates have to change for each issue. But it also makes quite an interesting statement that we're not imposing the same typeface on our readers each time. We're using those typefaces to communicate interesting content about all the material. And if you really want to look closely, you can see how all these different typefaces work. You know, we are in an amazing era for new typefaces and new type foundries. There's lots of quite young type foundries springing up all over the place, such as Cast in Italy and Sharptype, and not quite so young Commercial Type. They are also great supporters of the magazine through advertising. So there's a kind of virtuous circle of support to the type community, even when we're not doing a type special issue, which we do from time to time. I think this is a great era for magazines, and you can cover almost any subject in a magazine. I don't think a magazine necessarily has to be innovative to be good. I'm a great fan of magazines like The New Yorker, which has hardly changed in 90-odd years, and Sight and Sound, which has a very strong formula for covering all the movies of the moment. But then in the indie sector, people have enormous fun with the genre, such as Double Dagger, which is entirely Peter Benak's Works at Work, which is actually just closed down. And then you get innovative things like Wombat in France, which is actually a box for photographs design, and what a bit like magazine Unknown Public, the audio magazine I did in the 90s, which was a cardboard box. There's a hip-hop magazine called Brick, which uses very beautiful photography, looks nothing like most other. And then you get little very modest journals like Uniform, which are really very modest bits of publishing by people who have something to say. The great challenge to any indie magazine is what you do for issue 2, what you do for issue 3. Do you have an idea that you can really sustain over a series of magazines, as opposed to one great idea that makes one great first issue? A glance at the indie mag stores like Mag Culture or Stack, the magazine, Steve Watson's magazine service, shows is there's always a new idea for a magazine, that they come from all over the place, that there's always space for innovation in the format, in the design, in the way the subject matter is arranged. There are always people to go to for advice or inspiration, or just knowing there are other people out there fighting the same fight as you is actually quite comforting. Right now, Simon and Sarah and Holly and Janet and myself are immersed in doing two special issues all about magazines, which has been long coming. I mean, we've been thinking about this for a long time, but now we're completely immersed in it, and there's magazines all over the studio, and archive magazines from the 60s, from earlier. There's brand new magazines, there's short-lived magazines, there's interviews with people who've been involved in some of the best magazine design of recent years. One of the articles that I've really enjoyed putting together, which will be in the magazine special part one, is called Anatomy of a Magazine. And that actually looks at the elements that make a magazine, regardless of content. And it's things that are actually incredibly obvious, like the cover, the contents page, the features, the front matter, the shorter bits that have to be jigsawed together, the review section, the advertising, the colophon, where everyone gets credited. And so I've never seen an article that sets that out. And I thought it was an interesting thing for magazine readers to read about, and also could be very useful for nascent magazine makers and founders. Articles we publish take on new meaning because people become more famous or they achieve new things. An article by William Owen certainly was the first mention of the term social media in I, at a time when everyone said, what does social media mean? And then within a few months, it seemed it was being used by everyone. So it's interesting to see culture change while you're in the midst of commissioning a magazine. The nice thing about the quarterly cycle is you can't be completely up to the minute. When you look back at it, you are very much following the way things change and evolve within design and the culture at large. You know, the internet has made distribution much easier. You can't just sell magazines through novelty and flashy techniques of print production. You have to have really good stories, good ideas, and great photographs and images and great design. I also hope that young designers who are interested in editorial design see magazines as a way to do something new, to make their mark. You can't just be a designer and then make a magazine. You have to collaborate with photographers, picture editors, illustrators, writers, editors, sub-editors, proofreaders. There's a great deal of teamwork. If that's how you get the quality really high. And it's also much more fun to collaborate